News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but heard around the country, around the world. We're privileged to go to Texas. At the bottom of the hour, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is standing by. Will Kane, contractually obligated to come and join me after doing 3 hours on Fox and Friends. I think one of the quotes that I heard him talking to somebody else said, "I can't get enough of Brian." And I didn't hear it directly. I heard it from other people. And next thing you know, he's in studio. Is that, and Brent, look at this studio. Have you noticed?
I mean, you're really coming up in the world.
Right. Have you seen my name more often than these? I think we have two.
Is that what you like? You like to be surrounded by reminders of your name?
From guy from the Will Kane show? I don't thoroughly. I caught about the pot calling the kettle black. All right. So Will, we got a busy hour, but first let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Those are big jumps, and they're reflective not only of the failures of Joe Biden and the continued poor policy decisions that Democrats are making. People are looking back at the Trump term and saying, my paycheck went further. I felt that there was a better chance at tomorrow than today.
Aaron Perini weighing in, the ex-Trumpster. 2024, Trump versus Biden. Latest polls, game plans, and strategy as Trump is trapped in court and Joe talks climate and abortion.
Number two.
I actually think that in celebrity cases, you sometimes really need to take the stand. But after that ruling, no, I think I would advise him not to do it. The risks are too high. This is a very weak case.
I know, according to some, but maybe not to New York. Trump trial will feature a hearing on whether Donald Trump violated his gag order. 11 a.m., David Pecker of the Inquirer back on the stand. He's only there because he has to be. He's subpoenaed. The prosecution wants to say he conspired with Cohen to win an election and keep bad stories quiet. The defense? The NDA is not illegal.
Number one.
It is especially important that we remember the power of young people shaping this country today, of all days, as we once again witness the leadership of those peaceful student-led protests on campus.
Exactly. All the video I see, I just think peaceful. The riotous behavior overwhelms two of the biggest college campuses in New York City, along with Harvard, Yale. Now we find out about Tufts and Emerson. And the ceasefire movement has moved into a pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, anti-Semitic activism and violence. And, Will, that's really where we begin. I mean, this is a story that kind of snuck up on me. I did not think that this would be a major story 2 weeks ago. Did you?
What, that college campuses were engulfed in riots?
Yeah, for Palestine, which doesn't exist, for the Palestinian people, which was not a cause that America has been talking about over the last 10 years.
No, not surprised. I think you could see this coming from not just a mile
since
away.
Since October 7th?
I think you can see it coming through decades. So I would make 2 points that make this bigger, broader, and more predictable, Brian. One, what you're seeing on college campuses is a product of decades of teaching not just in the philosophy department, but integrated into every aspect of education, and not just at colleges, but throughout high schools, middle schools, even into elementary schools. It is critical theory. Critical theory is not a conspiracy. It is a Marxist ideology that divides the world into oppressor and oppressed. So children have grown up looking for the oppressed, and they have turned education not into a search for truth, but into activism. So they are activists for the oppressed, and they see any group, in this case it's Palestinians, as the oppressed. And the second thing you can see coming from a mile away is the anti-Semitism that is not just apparent, but openly flaunted in these protests. I think that anti-Semitism is historical. It's been present. And again, this time, not over decades, but over centuries.
You know, it's crazy. Since 9/11, they said, look out for Islamophobia, look out for anti-Muslim behavior. And even then, there would have been big backlash had Muslims been targeted or some picked up for overzealous investigations. But now, it's when you go after Israel, you are, as a politician, like Senator Schumer, which makes no sense to me, you could actually duck the issue unless you're bold like Senator Fetterman and care about what's right and wrong as opposed to how do I get 6 more years and how does my party get more power?
Schumer is an absolute mystery. You made the point yesterday on Fox and Friends.
Very nice to say mystery.
He is the height. You're going to be okay? Just knocking everything over in the studio.
Well,
you are like the Tasmanian devil. You're pure chaos.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean? Like, you have some self-awareness, right? You're walking around the couches on Fox and Friends. You're knocking things over. You have one thought that leads to another.
Just
you are chaos.
Eric and Pete, you're gonna stick up for me? How dare he attack me on my own
show? I love the Tasmanian devil analogy, right? It's a pretty good one.
I like to keep moving.
Mystery. Here's why Schumer is a mystery. You made the point yesterday on Fox and Friends. He's, I believe, the highest ranking member of the United States elected government ever. And he makes his priority, and he's Jewish. The highest ranking Jewish member, elected member ever in the United States. And he makes his priority, I don't know if he's doing soft drinks. He's doing some type
of drink.
He was
doing energy drinks.
Energy drinks. Zen, the nicotine product. These are the highest priorities to him, not anything that affects the Jewish community in the United States.
Except when Prime Minister Netanyahu seems to be too aggressive in Gaza, and he notices his president suffering in Michigan and Minnesota, then he calls for a regime change in another democracy, which is totally out of bounds and irresponsible.
Yeah, and this is the point in the conversation, Brian, where I think, I'm not because I like whataboutism or both sideism, but I actually I want to know the truth, and the truth is insofar as it invalidates us towards a resolution towards a better reality. I think there is a conversation for everyone to have about the future of Israel and the people of the Palestinians. I think you have to figure out what is some coexistence. But I don't think that should allow you to not just tolerate, but fly the flag of things that, as I started our conversation today, clearly have veered into anti-Semitism. That's what's happening on American colleges, not to mention, by the way, hatred of America. And those two things are, at this point, you can't separate that element of this from an earnest debate about the future of Israel and the Palestinians.
Well, they don't want you to separate it. I know that. But here's the thing. Any earnest conversation about a realistic conversation has to start with both sides. And the Palestinians have no interest in a two-state solution. Nobody wants to talk about a two-state solution. There's no point person. Hamas had an election. They've taken over. They're more popular in the West Bank, more popular in Gaza, and there's no hatred for them now. There's got to be a total wipeout of Hamas. And if the Palestinian people feel like they're hostage to Hamas, well, the best thing we could do is wipe out the cancer. And that cancer, armed by Iran and trained by Iran and supported by Iran, they're going to do everything that Iran wants. But if you wipe them out, then maybe there's somebody to rise up that you could actually deal with on the other side, because I think there's more than a conversation through my entire lifetime among Israelis about it, but not right now. You can't possibly want them to negotiate with another side when Hamas did what they did October 7th.
It's so important you bring up Hamas. So, to grant the assumption that there are, and I am going to grant the assumption, but to grant the assumption there are earnest students mixed in with the activists, with the agitators, with the funded groups. We know that. You and I broke it down this morning on Fox and Friends. The funded groups behind these protests, to the extent that there are earnest students, they say things like genocide in Gaza. Well, you and I were talking offline this weekend, and I think there's a lot of ignorance and lack of understanding on this fact right here. I got a text this morning. I think the latest numbers, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, and by the way, everyone thinks they inflate it, but I don't, for this part of our conversation, let's just accept the figures of the Gaza Health Ministry. It's 34,000 dead. Now, Israel, and I think the Gaza Health Ministry acknowledges something like this, at least 14,000 of them, 14,000.
I think it's 18, but go ahead.
If it's 18, okay, are combatants, meaning they're war fighters. So you're talking about a ratio there of 2-1, roughly, at worst 3-1. So what I'm talking about is civilian death to combatant death, right? In an urban warfare environment where Hamas's open strategy is to embed themselves within civilians. So you're talking about 2-1 to 3-1. No one wants civilian death. No one. But look, war is hell, and it happens. So put that into historical context. If your ratio is 2-1 to 3-1, what was it in Fallujah? What was it in Afghanistan? What was it in World War II? And the answer is way, way, way higher than 2 or 3-1.
Yeah, I think the other question is, if you really want to talk about it, would be a think tank, and it'd be something that takes years. Can you win a war with values and ethics that we're trying to win wars with these days? You know, we worry about civilians to the point we have pinpoint technology. We got this precision munitions that we expect just to kill bad people. And when other people die, it is a tragedy on all sides. But when other people we're fighting die, who are civilians, that's the goal. World Trade Center, all civilians, that's the goal. October 7th, all civilians, that's the goal. So we're fighting people that have no values and ethics and look at civilians as ripe targets, and yet they love the fact, relish the fact that they condemn the other side when civilians die. And we all know the story. It's real. They live in hospitals. These are military organizations who thrive in hospitals. The number of hospitals in Gaza are through the roof. And you might think, what great medical care. No, they're military bases. And then they built all with all of the money. They built 500 miles worth of tunnels. Do you think Palestinian women and children are being protected there? No, they are the human shields because no, they know in the West, because we will suffocate ourselves if we continue when we kill innocent people. They want us to. That's why they won't come to the table now and talk about hostages. Number one, a lot of them are dead. They don't want to admit it. And number two, I'll let you guys beat up on each other for a while. I'm going to let the Israeli government turn on each other. I saw there was rallies against Netanyahu's government in Tel Aviv. I hear in America there's unrest on college campuses. I'm going to lay back.
No doubt.
These people tear each other up.
No doubt. That is a propaganda win for Hamas.
So far. But if you go into Rafah and you wipe them out and then maybe get some hostages out soon, like this week, I'm all for that. But the problem is Joe Biden's bragging to donors, I stopped them from going into Rafah. So if he goes in, is he going to go to the UN and condemn them? He's already sanctioning one division of the IDF. Right. Isn't that crazy to you?
Yeah, I saw that. Right. I think your point, yeah, it's crazy. Well, Joe Biden is trying to make he's trying to live in this both sides world. And I paused for a moment of self reflection. I do not think I'm living in both sides world. I think I'm trying to understand perspective, but that doesn't impede moral clarity at the end of your opinion. And Joe Biden is trying to stand in the middle of moral clarity.
Yeah, do you want to hear that? Cut one.
Do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses?
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
Should the Columbia University president resign?
I didn't know that. Should she resign?
He didn't know what?
I guess he misunderstood the question. When he said, I think he thought she did resign. He goes, I didn't know that. I'll look into that. But to me, he's not zoned in. To me, I'd be staring at those monitors right until I had to leave my ridiculous Earth Day speech with AOC. And I would pull her aside and go, you're not helpful. You're making things worse. I'm trying to win an election and let the Israelis win a war. You and your squad speaking up and condemning me is doing nothing but fuel people to help Donald Trump. I would have pulled her aside. I wouldn't have made a statement. I've learned to listen to her. So that fortifies the wrong side.
Yeah, and her speech at Earth Day, I think, you know, reinforces the first point that I made to you, which was about education, how we could have seen this coming for decades, because she said, look at the power of young people, and celebrates the power of young people. Celebrating the power of young people is like celebrating a gun. It's the question is, where is the gun pointed?
Right.
It's a tool.
What people?
And the power of young people, we should be asking the question, where is it pointed? And right now it's pointed at
America.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to say through the lens of critical theory and oppress and oppress, but because of all of those things, it's pointed directly at America.
I will give an exclusive look at who's going to be at his podcast today, only if you stick around after this break. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Have you all been watching the Max documentary called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV? OMG. Nickelodeon, it wasn't a studio, it was Neverland Ranch with Kraft Services. It is just scene after scene, clip after clip of the child stars of their day being subjected to obviously inappropriate, highly sexualized degradation. So I don't know if this documentary is the talk of your town, but it is out here because it didn't just expose a dangerous workplace. It also exposed hypocrisy. Because
It must be pointed out that when the evil governor of Florida was saying the exact same thing about kids and creepy stuff at Disney that liberals now find intolerable at Nickelodeon, he was dismissed as a hick and a bigot. But why would a kids' content factory like Disney be all that different than the one at Nickelodeon? A 2014 CNN report discovered that at least 35 Disney employees had been arrested for sex crimes against children, and in 2021, Disney child star Alison Stoner confessed she only narrowly survived the toddler to train wreck pipeline. You know, Willie Sutton said he robbed banks because that's where the money is. And the reason we find pedophiles in the Boy Scouts and the rectory and kids' TV is that's where the kids are. DeSantis wasn't wrong. But we're so tribal now, the left will overlook child if the guy from the wrong party calls it out. Sure, Nickelodeon messed up Amanda Bynes, but the Mickey Mouse Club was where Britney Spears got her start, and she's perfectly fine.
Bill Maher on his monologue this week, Will Cain.
Wow.
Good. I mean, so creative. And, wow. And to go out and compliment Governor DeSantis.
I have to watch this thing about Nickelodeon. I'm unfamiliar.
Right.
With the
word. But you heard about, I mean, child stars. They seem to have trouble adjusting. Now we know why. Well, yeah. One of the reasons.
Yeah. It's like Christopher Hitchens once said, you know, if an atheist wakes up every day and says, I don't believe in God, it's not news. But if the Pope woke up one day and goes, you know, I'm not so sure about this God thing, then everyone would pay attention.
Right.
To hear Bill Maher say this makes it – that's why we pay attention. But he's right about the tribal thing. The left will dismiss it if the wrong person is the one pointing it out.
Bill Maher, Senator Fetterman, once in a while John Stewart. Some people are realizing how way left people are and it's destroying their livelihoods. But, Will, I promise my audience you a preview of your show today.
Well, my preview of my show began this morning, by the way, in a commercial break during Fox and Friends. Brian and I have had a little bit of a difference opinion on the America First interest in Ukraine. So I asked Brian his perspective. I wanted to steel man against my own perspective. And the reason why is coming up today on The Will Cain Show, which streams live at foxnews.com, the Fox YouTube channel, and the Fox Facebook page at 12 Eastern time, but always on demand. Subscribe on YouTube or Spotify or Apple. I have David Sachs. VC investor, PayPal mafia originally, very opposed to the war in Ukraine, very active on X, speaking out against it. So I want to have that conversation, but not just from somebody who might share my opinion on a few things. I want to see play devil's advocate. I want to hear your point of view and see what his answers are to some of these things you and I talked about during
right.
a commercial break.
And my audience mostly knows, and I'll go over it again, but I'll just add two other things. Common refrains to people against the interaction. They say Zelensky hasn't held elections since the war started. Constitutionally, he can't. In the Constitution, says you don't hold elections during war. He would do it. He'd win it. Number two is about the Russian Orthodox Church. They say you're shutting down churches. You're shutting down churches because over 100 priests were caught spying on Ukraine and giving the money. It's a Russian Orthodox Church. Back the information back to Russia. In the middle of a war, in the middle of Kyiv, that's a bit of a problem. So we shut it down. It doesn't mean he hates religion. Just two common, easy things to knock out of the park.
I appreciate that. I'll have that. Again, my goal is to I like you know what a straw man is. A straw man is a weak argument that you can knock down. My goal is to steel man. That's what I want to do. So when I have something that I believe, I want to subject it to the strongest arguments in opposition to see if my argument can hold up.
And I can listen to two, right? On Spotify or anything. I can listen on the Fox YouTube channel, and I can listen to find out how good your argument is.
You're going to be disappointed, I'm sure.
No, but... I will not be disappointed. Just stand up strong. Ukraine needs our help. Get them their money. They will win.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Today also serves as a reminder of the power of organizing, of what we can accomplish when young people, climate advocates, labor organizers, and working people of all backgrounds come together to demand the future we all deserve. It is especially important that we remember the power of young people shaping this country today, of all days, as we once again witness the leadership of those peaceful student-led protests on campuses like Columbia, Yale, Berkeley, and many others.
So that was AOC, part of her Earth Day speech. She went out of her way to do something I think she knows is totally inaccurate. Talk about the peacefulness at Columbia and other universities. They're not peaceful at Yale. They're not peaceful at Harvard. They're not peaceful at Tufts. They're not peaceful at Berkeley. They're not peaceful at Emerson. And at NYU last night, a new time will know, they gathered, they rallied. Outsiders came in. The school presidents asked school management, said, clear it up, please. Guys, you got to break up. Finally, they realized it was out of control in Washington Square Park. So they called in the cops. They heard chants of NYPD, KKK, or however it goes. Meanwhile, it's a minority majority. And among the cops clearing them out were black. You're calling a black person a KKK member. You're idiots. And then... With the cops in there, they had to arrest over 100. Actually, it was up to 300. But the problem is they put them in zip ties. They send them down. They get a summons, and they come back as heroes. That's the issue. Now, in Colombia, Thursday, they rip up the tent city. Friday, they come back again. And over the weekend, they rally over the weekend. The president says, let me talk to you. They don't want to talk to the president of Colombia, at which time there was burnings and there was riots outside the school. So she said... They're targeting Jews, so I tell everybody, just do a Zoom class, okay? Today is hybrid, but one of the reasons, and I don't buy this explanation, one of the people that cannot get into the school is a Jewish professor. Why didn't he get in? When asked why they killed his key card, they said, because we can't guarantee your safety. That's why Robert Kraft, one of the richest men in America, owner of the New England Patriots, alumnus of Columbia, and also one of the biggest donors, said this. Cut nine.
I never thought I'd see what's going on in America, what's happening right now, and it really pains me to see it. You know, we have our holiday going on now. It goes back to memory of thousands of years ago where negative things were happening, and the same is happening now in this great country that offered so many opportunities to our families who came here as immigrants. And we have to keep it open. We can't have this intimidation that's filtering through all these colleges and the hate continue to grow and multiply the way it is.
So many successful people came from Colombia. Look for those billionaires to push back, many of which are Jewish. Look for them to push back big time. And I hope that gets people's attention. I hope that gets a new president at Columbia that understands you got to change the curriculum, the mindset, and the sense of following the rules, taking over Center Square, stopping the classes, threatening any type of religious sect, person, or anyone, unacceptable, you would think, at a sophisticated place like that. NYU, ton of arrests. I think the number was pretty big. Where did I have? I just wrote this down. So we found out 133 were arrested at NYU. 61 were arrested at Harvard. 50 arrested at Yale. Among the chants they were doing is NYPD KKK. Nice. Isn't that great? You know how many people were probably kept safe, especially in that cesspool called Washington Park? People with purple hair, nose rings, and mescaline. The people show up there. Now they're just vilifying the cops. Really, they got to take it from a bunch of arrogant Ivy Leaguers, or might as well be Ivy Leaguer at the NYU. Tough to get in, impossible to pay for. Tufts, Emerson, Rice, MIT, all had empathetic riots around that and sit-ins. That won't happen in Oklahoma, according to one Oklahoma State superintendent. Listen to Ryan Walters last night with Trace Gallagher, Cut 11. He's the Oklahoma State superintendent, I should say. Cut 11.
Well, I would say that's not going to happen here in Oklahoma. We will not allow it. It is very clear that the teachers' unions are taking their orders from Joe Biden. I mean, we have never had a more pro-terrorist, anti-Semitic, anti-American president than Joe Biden. And it's very, very clear. The teachers' unions are there to indoctrinate kids, to turn them against our country, turn them against Jews. And that's what you're seeing here. And the reality is the unions have been the very loyal foot soldiers for Joe Biden to focus on indoctrinating our kids. And now you see it rampant at college campuses. Joe Biden has allowed the Jews in Israel to not be safe. And now we have our Jewish friends here in the United States not being safe on college campuses or K-12 schools. We have to take a stand here to protect Jews in our country.
And just think about this. If you're a high school junior right now, or parent of a junior, seniors have made up their mind by May 1st. I'm sure you made up their mind already. But if you are a parent of that, then that's got to come into your decision. Wow, Columbia is a great school. Congratulations, Harvard, Yale. Don't think so. Not if your kid can get to another great school. I don't want Columbia on my resume right now. I don't want it on my kid's resume or anybody I'm related to. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now. Welcome back, Colonel.
Hey, Brian, thanks. I got tied up with my grandson dropping off of school. Hey, you're absolutely right. When you think about Columbia, Yale, and all these places, you know, they are putting the, you know, the protection of people that are supporting a terrorist group over students, and to include especially the Jewish students. And they're making all of these accommodations, changing exam schedules and telling students that they have to stay at home and take virtual classes. They pay $66,000 to $70,000 a year, and now they're being told that we're not going to protect you, we're not going to keep you safe, you just stay at home, and this is how you're going to get your education. It's unacceptable, especially here in the United States of America.
Yeah, and by the way, I played the Oklahoma cut because at Oklahoma State, they said that we're not going to let it happen. The minute those tents start going up, you send over security. If you can't handle it, you call in the cops. And if they can't handle it, you call in the National Guard. Simple. And I don't care if the kids decide they don't want to come back or we want to speak up and speak out. No, you don't take over my campus yeah. because you have a belief, let alone it happens to be an anti-American belief. You know, it would be great once in a while for people just to take on maybe adopt our foreign policy and recognize our allies, like after October 7th. Did you see the numbers on TikTok? So on TikTok, I believe TikTok is the foundation of all this, with 170 yeah. million people on for at least an hour a day. Do you know from 10:06 to 10:30, there were four times as many posts of Stand with Palestine than there were Stand with Israel? Do you know there were globally 210,000 hashtags of Stand with Palestine, over 17,000 for Israel, 8,000 posts for Palestine overall, 3,000 for Israel. So that's the sense on TikTok. And I wonder how much news is going to be skewed and weighted towards Palestinians, towards Muslims, away from Israel. So they wonder how they lost the PR war. It's because it's been fixed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And without a doubt, you have to believe the Communist Chinese Party has a part in that and sowing this division, because guess what? Who is the number one customer for the oil and gas coming out of Iran? And Iran, we know, is the number one supplier of Islamic terrorism. Hamas is number one supplier. So that's all tied together. And we know who is the umbrella overseer of TikTok, and that is the Communist Chinese Party. And for these young people not to see that and understand that they're just pawns, you know, where are the adults in all of this? I mean, where are these campus presidents that say, hey, look, either you go to class, you can have your free speech, but you're not going to support a terrorist organization. You're not going to disrupt operations and classes here on this campus. And if you continue to do so, we're going to expel you.
So I want to change gears and talk about the president of the United States now for day two of testimony, day six overall, stuck in a courtroom. And now it's going to be till 2 o'clock because they're going to pay homage to Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 90 minutes to find out if he violated the gag order. And then they're going to put David Pecker back on the stand. What's the sense in Texas? How interested are they there?
Well, Texas is more so interested in what's happening on our border. That continues to be the number one issue. And, of course, we know that the current president, Joe Biden, is not doing anything as far as the border. And therefore, Texas is going to support the former president, Donald Trump. And I think that what the left is doing, they can be all giddy and happy on MSNBC or all their media platforms, but they're making him into a martyr. And more people are seeing what they're doing, and it really is unfair. And it really is election interference, because they're trying to tie him up to keep him from being out there and campaigning for this position to be the 47th president of the United States of America. So I think really and truthfully, that they're losing overall. They may think that they're winning because, you know, Letitia James was coming back in trying to invalidate the bail bond.
Didn't work.
And all of these things. It didn't work. But they're just showing their hand, and it's going to backfire against them.
So Jonathan Turley weighed in. I would challenge his intellect against anybody's in the legal profession. And he said this, he's incensed that this is going to trial. He's incensed that he's seen the substance of the case, and he's getting angrier by the day. And he's worried about the jurors, not only because they're New Yorkers, where the president got 15% of the vote, but because of what they're hearing. Cut 18.
We know that this is going to happen, that you see this already, even though there's been some liberal legal experts have criticized this case and said, we don't see the crime either, and we certainly have never seen a case like this one. The media is expected to become this echo chamber for the district attorney. And even if you tell jurors to avoid the news, there's no real guarantee that they're going to do that. And they're going to be in a city that's absolutely saturated with it. So the defense has to go in and assume that all of those fail-safes have failed and that you're going to have to make that case even stronger in the courtroom.
Your thoughts about that?
Well, he's absolutely right. And consider two things. First and foremost, the case that Letitia James brought forward, this, again, was a case where there were no victims. I mean, there was no one to come up and say, yeah, I was done wrong. And now this case, which is some 7 years later that no one else wanted to touch, now all of a sudden Alvin Bragg wants to touch it, and it has loopholes all in it, and it's like Swiss cheese. But this is what the left is all about. You look at what has happened with Jack Smith. You look at what has happened with Fannie Willis down in Atlanta, Fulton County. This is a concerted effort. This is a coordinated effort to keep Donald Trump focused on in the courtroom and legal proceedings rather than getting out and campaigning. And I think that what they want to be able to do is just get that title on him, convicted felon. But what they have to understand is that it's not going to mean anything to most of the people here in the United States of America that believes that you have done wrong against this man. You have gone and turned this into a political trial.
Yeah, if things ain't doubt about it. Now they're going to have immunity on Thursday. They're going to hear about that. And the president will say, the former president will say, listen, if I'm going to have to worry about being sued after I'm out of office because of my policies in office, should I sue George W. Bush because there was no weapons of mass destruction? Should I sue Joe Biden because he let the border down and ruined every border city in America, ruined my ranch, ruined my farm, ruined my life, ruined my town? Should I sue him on that? Because he certainly is complicit. That was his policies. These were the policies. But they'll come back and they're going to say, well, can you do an Aaron Burr, Donald Trump, and just go shoot somebody, even, you know, a politician, and then still not get prosecuted? So that's an extreme example. But I think that what the president will say is any problem you have with me happened when I was president, January 6th. When it comes to the document, I took those documents when I was president. That was before I was a former president. So that's the argument today. Just your thoughts on that?
Well, the hypocrisy is laughable once again. When you have Robert Hur, who goes in and says that Joe Biden is guilty of this, he did not, you know, equivocate on that. Joe Biden had no legal standing in as a senator or as a vice president having classified documents, but other than the fact that, you know, he's too old and too feeble to be able to, you know, stand prosecution. You cannot have this type of hypocrisy. Either you're guilty of a crime or you're not guilty of a crime. You know, Hunter Biden lied on a 4473 gun purchase form. Either you're guilty of a crime or you're not guilty. So the American people see this and it's abhorrent to them. And I think that's the case that Donald Trump has to make. There are two tiers of justice. There's a justice for the Democrats. You can lie to Congress like Alejandro Mayorkas has done. You can be part of a policy that is killing Americans. But Chuck Schumer can come in and say, we're dismissing these charges. But yet you can charge Donald Trump for something that was cooked up by Hillary Clinton with the Russia, 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 and that's supposed to be the grounds for impeachment. We have become a fourth world country, not a third world, but a fourth world country thanks to these progressive leftists.
Colonel Alan West, thanks so much, Colonel. Have a great day.
Always a pleasure. Sorry for being late.
No, no problem. Hey, we're back in a moment. I'll take some calls, 1-866-408-7669. I also want you to know that it's going to be a big vote today on what the House passed over the weekend. I've not talked about that much. We will when we return. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I mean, we know that Trump and his campaign are going to make the most of the fact that he is required to be in court for much of these proceedings. And, you know, he's not afraid of embracing the moment. We saw him, you know, speak directly to the camera recently as during the jury selection process last week. This is moving forward despite the fact that Trump's defense has been trying to delay the start of these proceedings. It's starting anyways, and Trump is deciding to go ahead and campaign there. And of course, he has made the fact that he is the target of the justice system a key part of his narrative, a key part of his bid to the American people. So we're going to continue to see him make that a focus.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see that focus and see if he's going to be able to do it. Well, right now, Donald Trump is stuck in the courtroom. He's right now fighting to make sure he doesn't get fined or jailed because of violating the gag order. He clearly has, but he should not have a gag order. That's the whole thing. The other thing that's going on is in Capitol Hill. Donald Trump came out yesterday and backed the Speaker of the House. Why is that significant? Because the Speaker did not get border security in a bill that included Ukraine funding, Taiwan funding, and Israel funding. It was four separate bills, as well as Indochina and Indochina. And it also includes a TikTok ban if they don't divest. The Senate's looking at it today. Now, why would the president not back Marjorie Taylor Greene? He said, look, he's got a slim majority. He's doing the impossible. He's a good man. Don't worry about it. Also, Donald Trump may not be all in for Ukraine war, but he understands it's necessary to support that. He knows what Russia will be up to. He knows what a victory looks like. And he doesn't want to be the one responsible for denying aid to Ukraine. On somebody else's watch, he doesn't want him to turn around and blame him. Because so much of this has gone wrong is because of Joe Biden slow walking the weapons and refusing weapon systems he eventually gave them. So the Speaker of the House had to do something that's never popular with his party. When it comes to Ukraine aid, I think more voted against it than voted for it. So that's pretty significant. Britt Hume weighed in on his fate. Cut 25.
Johnson is at the moment in a stronger position than one might have imagined at this stage, largely because the bill was passed with a great many, the Ukraine bill, with a great many Democratic votes. Democrats are grateful that he brought it to the floor. It was a priority of the administration and of a great many Republicans as well, resisted by a subset of the Republican caucus. And Democrats may very well be prepared now to vote for him in any measure to try to deprive him of his job. So I think he's in a stronger position. He's even being praised by the Washington Post, which is not always a good thing for a Republican. But nonetheless, there it is.
Well, there it is. He's passed. I think it's going to pass today. They're going to lace it up and pass in the Senate. And I know there's some downside to it. I know good people like Chip Roy are upset by it. And maybe the Speaker could have leveraged to get some border security in. But ultimately, it's going to have to wait.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where everything's going on in the world. I mean, you got a former president on trial downtown. Also in downtown, NYU is in flames because these protesters don't like Israel. What's worse, Columbia. Are right in Uptown, the Upper West Side. So I'd like to say, you know, we're from New York, but it doesn't really matter because we cover the whole country. But right now, the whole country is looking here aghast. This hour, we're going to be joined by Ian Pryor. He is now in studio. And also Amit Brandon Kadash, a member of the Israeli IDF and founder and CEO of OnCourse. It's an app that helps people decide what to eat based on their culinary profile. That was the old rule. Now he's fighting for his life and fighting for his country. And then we'll do Varney and Company at 5, do a simulcast at 22. So great to see you, Ian.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So, number one, you had to stay in New York last night.
I did.
You would just tell me you were flipping around the late night shows.
I was. And I never watched late night TV. I was, you know, looking for the basketball games. They only had a few.
You had the Knick game on.
You had the Knick game. I was trying to get the Cavs and Magic, but that's all right. So I turned on Jimmy Kimmel, and I mean, it was just nonstop about Trump, the Trump trial. Nothing else, right? Nothing. At least I didn't see anything about the protests, anything about what's going on in Israel. You know, then I flip over to Colbert. It's the same thing. And I just say to myself, what reality are these people living in? Like, Joe Biden is the president. We are engulfed in flames of international crisis right now. And yes, there is a trial going on, but there are other things as well. And, you know, they just ignore the fact that their president cannot do the job.
Right. I mean, right now you have the NYPD being called KKK, right? A majority minority force, many of which are black. They're being screaming in their face. I'm talking about learned students who can afford $90,000 for NYU tuition. They called in the cops last night because they could not get the students to disperse. But get this, the faculty locked arms and stood in front of the students. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, one of the things, and I'll get back to that in a second, but I saw on Twitter, where people were placing lists of the names of the police officers that were affecting the arrests.
That.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if that's legit or not. I saw that. That is scary stuff. And I think what you've seen you know, over the past couple of days and really years, is academia has been captured not just by leftist ideologies, but they've really become a target, right? I mean, look, social media is a social experiment that can be used
right.
to influence. And that's what we're seeing here now. We're seeing the weakness of the American student, American academia, as a petri dish to protest against our ally, Israel.
Right. So we're seeing right now, for example, in Colombia, there's a push to divest. There's a push to divest in Harvard and Yale. I guess there's some investment in some Israeli companies. So they've gone from Gaza, humanitarian aid, to ceasefire, to anti-Semitic behavior, to now pro-Palestinian. And now a lot of these people, it's 50-50 with pro-Hamas, which in fairness, Hamas wins all the election. 80% of the Palestinians were for the October 7th massacre. So you're picking your sides if you're a 20-year-old who was lucky enough to get into Columbia, Harvard, Yale, Tufts, Emerson.
Right. And most of these people likely weren't alive on 9/11, right? They didn't experience that. They didn't experience, you know, what we were as a country, who our allies were, who right. assisted us in getting bin Laden, who assisted us in getting the intelligence. Well, Israel is right there at the front. We've been allies with them since 1948. Yet now here we are in the year 2024, where everything is oppression, equity,
right.
anti-racism, et cetera, which is insane, because if you think about the struggles of the Israeli people over the thousands of years, where they've now gotten their own state, which is a leading democratic state in the world. And they're like, no, you got to get rid of that. I mean, isn't that their goal? Isn't that their goal to say, look, people that were oppressed in Egypt thousands of years ago yeah. have now risen to the top of society in the world?
I guess so. So Kathy Hochul, the ridiculous governor of this state, did this. Cut three.
Students are scared. They're afraid to walk on campus. They don't deserve that. They deserve to be in an environment that is free from discrimination as required by state human rights laws. So that I leave here today, I also have a message for everyone. I was once a student protester. I protested institutions. I protested governments. I protested against apartheid. But I've never seen a level of protest that is so person to person.
But you would not call in the National Guard. But right now they've overwhelmed the center square in that university. And they told everyone, make your own choice, hybrid or not, while locking out a Jewish professor. They said, because we can't guarantee your safety.
Well, leadership comes from the top, right? I mean, it has to come from the White House. You know, go back to the 1960s. JFK sent the National Guard, right? Or was it Eisenhower? Sent the National Guard. Where is Joe Biden on this? This is more than just New York. Yes, it is New York, but it also involves federal civil rights. It involves an international crisis, and it probably involves some kind of foreign interference through social media channels to get this thing ginned up.
Do you think it's worth an investigation to find out who's paying for this?
Absolutely. And the Biden administration needs to lead on this. And so far, all we've seen is, you know, walking away from reporters. I haven't seen an address to the nation. I mean, this is a serious issue that the Biden administration needs to deal with. And so far, they're just ignoring it and, you know, doing their thing on Twitter.
And they're worried about being too tough. And you know why? Michigan and Minnesota.
Right.
So if you alienate the Muslim community that's pro-Palestinian, you don't win those states. So that's what he's trying to split the difference. And Trump's being smart in this case. To lay out a little bit, here's Michael Rappaport, the actor, who doesn't know if he's going to vote for Trump, but is out on Biden, Jewish, just got back from Israel, cut seven.
This is not the New York way. This is an embarrassment to New York City. As ridiculous as these people are across the street, as offensive as these people are across the street, agenda number one through 133 is to free our hostages. These are bullies. These are bullies. These are cowards. These are pathetic, low-life man.
And he went off just a little bit. This is blurring the lines. You see Bill Maher saying stuff like this, and you see guys like Michael Rappaport saying stuff like this. You can't go along with this.
Well, yeah, and Michael Rappaport had another video a couple of days ago, which he clearly does not like President Trump. But at the same time, he said, I'm going to laugh when he gets elected because of you. I'm not saying I'm going to vote for him, but I am going to laugh.
Yeah, if you have do you have Michael Rappaport for yesterday? Yeah, we had that. We might as well play it for people that might have missed it. Look, he's a solid actor. He's not, you know, doesn't have the power of Al Pacino, but for a New Yorker who's very symbolic, very much linked to New York, who was a very big critic of Trump, to say this is significant. Listen.
You know what's going to be, you know what's going to be great? When Donald Trump gets elected, and I ain't saying I'm voting for him, but when he does win, and he's going to win, the screaming that you're doing at Jews about free Palestine, the screaming that you're doing at Zionists is going to be nothing compared to the screaming you're going to be doing come November when Donald Trump wins presidency because of you.
Well, he's going to, he would, Donald Trump would be on camera right now from the Oval Office saying, I would, by the way, walking to the cameras, not from, he'd be saying, I'm calling on the National Guard and all these states and these governors to step up and let the students go back to school, finish up their semester. There's a way to do it. This is not doing it. Harvard, smart. They lock their center out, whatever this, I've never been to Harvard, but they locked out their square so you can't get in until Friday. With the loud Yale, they tried to take the center. Columbia, they did. NYU, they did. Tufts, they did. They did it at a place called the New School downtown. They took over the lobby. So Harvard goes, no, no, we're putting up the gates. No one's getting through. So they got to be a little bit smart about it, because once they're in, it's hard to rip these guys out, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is mostly Ivy League schools. It's mostly Northeastern schools. It's liberal universities. As a parent, do you want your daughter or son to go to Harvard or NYU or Columbia or one of these schools right now?
I don't want to learn their resume.
Absolutely not. I mean, look at where we are. For, you know, 30 years ago, it would have been a dream to go to one of those schools.
Right.
Now, you know, let me look somewhere else.
Right. And Ian, of course, everyone knows what you did in Virginia when you stood up and pushed back against the curriculum you were seeing affecting your kids. You organized a team. You organized the parents and formed an organization.
Well, and that's right. And if you think about what Rappaport said, what happened in Virginia, we were very much a reaction. What we did was a reaction to a very similar type of behavior as you're seeing from these protesters, right? Where, you know, if you don't agree with us, we're going to shut you down. We're going to, you know, cancel you. We're going to do all of this. And we said, no, we're not going to let that happen. And so we organized. So it's the same thing. What he's saying is you're going to get Donald Trump elected. Well, it's a very similar thing to what happened in Virginia, where the left, that the far left, that small 5% of people, and we know who they are, they're the ones that changed Virginia through their actions and what their actions resulted, which was parents getting together, people getting together and saying, you know, enough's enough. We're going to organize here and we're going to push back for once.
Right. And Ian Pryor's here. Ian, I want to take a short time out. I want to talk a little bit about this case.
Sure.
Because we know today, just to set everybody up, David Pecker, the Inquirer, is probably going to take the stand at 11 o'clock. He's a prosecution witness. What I want to ask from you, too, is knowing that he was being heavily investigated and now he had to answer a subpoena to go up there. And I wonder, when that investigation, did they cut a deal with him that if you testify against your buddy, Donald Trump, you're not going to look at any charges? Is that going to affect his testimony? And then, of course, the president's chances of getting jailed for violating what they said is a gag order. And they put that in place. I think according to the gag order, the president did violate it. The question is, for me, should he have a gag order on him? Michael Cohen doesn't have it. Nobody else has it. A lot going on today. So glad you're here. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I think, you know, the Democrats claim that Trump is a threat to democracy. The real threat to democracy is the willingness to abuse the power of your office to influence what should otherwise be a free and fair election. And that's exactly what's going on downtown in the courtroom. I mean, look at just this week. You've got a hearing in the civil case about essentially nothing. You've got a criminal trial starting, and later this week there'll be a Supreme Court argument, all in cases that were made up specifically for the purpose of influencing the outcome of an election.
And that is one of the Trump attorneys. He weighed in earlier. That is Chris Keist. With me in studio is another attorney, Ian Pryor. He's going to be outnumbered today. He's the author of Parents of the World Unite, senior advisor at American First Legal, and executive director of Fight for Schools. I just want you to weigh in on what we're going to be looking at today. 6 weeks of a civil trial. The prosecution is going to say that Donald Trump colluded with David Pecker and Michael Cohen to fix an election and to keep negative stories out. And the defense goes, no, NDAs are not illegal. They're not unconstitutional. They're allowed all the time.
Well, yeah, not only that, but I mean, if you're running for office, I mean, certainly working with the media to kill stories that would hurt your chances is par for the course for running for election. But I think what we're seeing here from sort of a big picture is the use of the prosecutorial system to go after political rivals. And, you know, that is something that we have not done generally in the past. And the reason why we have, if you go back to, you know, really the Roman Republic, this is what would happen, right? Where somebody would be a consul for a year, or they'd have some position, and they couldn't be prosecuted when they were in office. But when they get out of office, then their rivals would go and prosecute them to take out their, you know, their potential opposition. And what that ultimately led to Caesar having to cross the Rubicon, because that's the only way that he was going to be able to escape really prosecution by his rivals and go in and take over. And there we have the fall of the Republic, right? This is exactly what we're starting to see now with prosecuting former presidents. It's dangerous.
Try to keep them off the ballot. Try to put them into court. 2 civil trials, 4 criminal cases.
Exactly. And that is why we have in the Constitution impeachment power to prevent this, right? If you're impeached, you're impeached. The end. Instead, now we're going down this dark path where it's going to be retribution after retribution. And, you know, that's going to be extremely damaging right to our democracy.
Dude, you know, people just keep saying, well, he only got 50% of the vote in New York City. He can't get a fair trial. Is that wrong?
I mean, I think it's going to be tough to get a fair trial based on the jury pool. But, you know, all it's going to take is one juror. In a criminal case, all it right takes is one juror that says, I'm not backing off my stance. I mean, we all saw, was it 12 Angry Men? You know, that great movie from the 60s. You know, one juror can stop a conviction, and one juror can ultimately convince people for an acquittal.
You were talking about Jimmy Kimmel going off the reservation. No idea where he's coming from. Stephen Colbert the same way. But Bill Maher and guys like Michael Rappaport giving you hope. Here's a little of Bill Maher talking about wokeness, which you're always fighting back against. Cut 34.
Wokeness is not an extension of liberalism anymore. It's more often taking something so far that it becomes the opposite. Teaching kids not to hate or judge those who are different, great. Proud we got there, all for that. But at a certain point, inclusion becomes promotion. And contrary to current progressive dogma, children aren't miniature adults wise beyond their years. They're morons. They're gullible morons who'll believe anything and just want to please grown-ups. And they don't have any frame of reference, so they normalize whatever's happening. That's why endlessly talking about gender to 6-year-olds isn't just inappropriate. It's what the law would call entrapment, which means enticing people into doing something they wouldn't ordinarily do.
Yeah. So Bill Maher weighing in, giving you hope?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that when you look at people like Bill Maher, obviously we're not going to agree on everything, but the contours of the debate are there, of civil debate, of, you know, the ability to look at things differently. And maybe you move that person 1% your way and he moves you 1% the other way, and you come to some kind of consensus. That's how this country should work, not the way where it's, you don't agree with every single thing I say,
right?
You're going to jail.
Or in the Republican sense, if you don't agree with me, I'm going to try to oust you as speaker. It's the wrong attitude. Has anyone ever been in team sports? Once in a while, we got to sacrifice for the greater good. How about every day?
It really has come down to that. You know, I blame social media for a lot of this, where, you know, back in the old days, right, you used to have a point of view that mattered and that was important in order to get it published. Now anybody can get their thoughts published, right? And they can find other people that are just as crazy as them.
Here's a little more from Bill Maher.
And if you think that some of that isn't going on with gender in schools, you're not watching enough TikTok videos.
I pledge allegiance to the queers.
I'm not allowed to be out as trans non-binary at school. So my response to this is to be as obnoxiously queer as possible.
There's a certain kind of activist these days who wants to take heterosexuality, old school, old fashioned, boring, minding its own business, heterosexuality, and lump it in with patriarchy and sexism and racism and tell kids, wouldn't it be cool if you were anything but that?
It's singing your song, right?
I mean, exactly, right? We're giving people a voice to broadcast to millions of others that should not have really that ability until they've matured and have a voice that you know, people can have reasonable debates with. And the result of that is, you know, this culmination of all these viewpoints that don't make sense. People think that it's more than 1% because of the outsized nature of the amplification.
And then the crazy statements and beliefs that they have.
Right. And then you get the politicians that say, oh, well, we've got to cater to that because I got a lot of followers on TikTok.
I mean, how hard would it be for President Biden to say transgender men should not be playing with women and girls? I'm worried about my granddaughter. I understand you going through a thing. Go through your thing. Go do it. But you can't play. That's it. Dawn Staley set everybody back, but thankfully other people are stepping up, you know, the coach of South Carolina. You'll talk about that in that number today?
I think so.
All right. In other words, you don't control the format.
No.
All right. Ian Pryor, thank you. Always great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Iran is a top threat to the United States, not just to Israel. I think people forget about that. This is a state sponsor of terrorism, the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, that is already responsible for killing hundreds of Americans. And we know they chant death to America, death to Israel, not the other way around. And the missiles you just saw a week ago raining down on Israel, 120 ballistic missiles plus the cruise missiles and the drones. Remember, they're building longer range missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, to partner with their nuclear weapons program to threaten the United States. That's their ultimate goal here. And so the question is, how did we get here? What is going on right now? Since Joe Biden took office, Iran has raced forward in its nuclear program.
So that is Richie Goldberg from the Defense of Democracies talking about the fact that Iran is not just Israel's problem. They're at the hub of Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, as well as the Houthi rebels. And they're all finding a way to make life miserable for the Israelis, but yet they know they're overpowered by the Israelis. But it is our problem, too. Case in point, Iran's proxies hit our base for the first time in weeks. Didn't have any casualties. We blew up their launchers, but here we go again. Amit Brandon Kadosh joins us now, a member of Israel's IDF and founder of CEO of Endcourse. Amit, welcome back. Your thoughts, first off, about the Iranian proxies decided to hit our troops again.
Hey, Brian. Well, thank you for having me. So I just got back from 2 days serving in reserve. And I was also stationed in reserve again when, we had the Saturday with the Iran and stuff, everything is going on. And I can tell you that the state of Israel during the war was very challenging. But in the midst of chaos, that we're Israelis are really doing our best. I can share that the level of resilience and fortitude we had, especially after what happened in the 7th of October, was really, really high. And we were looked up for that.
So how do you feel about Israel's response to Iran's 300 rocket attack?
I can share that. From what I can share, I can say that the response was pretty moderate, but it was also very calculated. I have full confidence in everything the higher command will decide to do and give any counters in their response. I have complete trust they will deliver whatever needed.
However, there was a report, not refuted, that immediately they wanted a bigger response right at Iran, and that the U.S. really wanted, and the foreign minister of Britain and Germany really pushed Netanyahu to please reconsider and go for a limited response. Would you say that that's probably true?
I'm not quite sure, because eventually, I don't have any seat in the board of that committee, so I probably don't know better. But what can I share from a civilian standpoint and a reserve force as a combat communication combat officer? I can say that, as I mentioned, we have a complete trust in everything they're doing. The IDF is really on high alert 24/7, and we are ready to rock and roll whatever needed. That's probably it.
All right, so they did blow up a satellite center right in the middle of it, between a military base and the nuclear program. That is a pretty effective message sent. And the fact that Iran's not talking about it, Israel's not talking about it, we're not talking about it, I find fascinating.
Yep. You know, eventually we are focusing on delivering no matter what, whether it's business or any ops. So, yeah,
Got it.
Are Israelis.
So what is it going to take, Ahmed? How important is going into Rafah?
Well, it really depends on the states of the hostages and multiple factors. So I was not stationed in Gaza this current war. I was stationed in the northern border fighting Hezbollah, where we got hit and everything. But I can say that every operation we did in Gaza was super meticulous and super calculated to do the minimum we can regarding casualties and really do the maximum output that we can in order to bring safety to our people.
So what was it like in the north? I hear you're 200 miles off the border just because of Hezbollah's rockets, correct? That means everybody's out of there?
Yep. The northern border is pretty empty. A lot of towns are evacuated. Imagine that children leaving their houses, families, complete families, leaving their being detached from their places, the place they were born. And now they're traveling back and forth between a couple of hotels in Israel, but not really a way to live for the past 6 months. And it's really challenging for them to operate on. And yeah, I was stationed on the northern border, and we did a lot of operation over there and still do. I'm supposed to be back in the field probably tomorrow.
You're going to be back on the field tomorrow?
Yep, exactly.
You got wounded?
Yeah. It wasn't planned, we can say. So what happened is we had operation, me and my unit, in the northern border, and really, you know, try to run a company in the midst of all of that was super, super challenging, and a lot of stuff going on. And what happened is we got hit by an anti-tank missile, me and my unit. You know, the sound of sirens, the sound of bullets, the background noises you have when you're, you know, contacting customers or whatever, it's super, super challenging. And yeah, we got hit. I got hit 2 days in the hospital, but, you know, we managed to stay alive. Fortunately, everyone is.
That's great. So the feeling on the ground in Israel, get the hostages back, support for Netanyahu for now?
Well, I can say that I'm definitely supporting the IDF and every activity they're going to make. I'm standing strong behind them. Behind everyone else, it's a big question mark. Mainly, I have a complete trust in everything, especially after what happened on the 7th of October. Nobody's going to be numb. Yeah.
And what about your decision to sell your company after you got wounded?
Yeah, so what happened is the company was doing pretty good. We had over 2,400 locations, 500,000 users downloads for the platform. I don't know if you know what we did in the company. So we developed an app that helps people decide what to eat based on their culinary profile. It's like DoorDash on steroids. We can almost say it's like Spotify for food. And we were doing pretty successful up until that point. 7th of October hit. I was supposed to be back in Austin, where our headquarters are, by the 10th of October. A few days after that, finding myself fighting in the northern border in Hezbollah. What happened is we decided to freeze operation because all of the R&D was also drafted in reserve. And we got an acquisition offer, very surprisingly, from one of our business partners. And the next day, really the next day, we got hit by the anti-tank missile. And yeah, that's where I decided to sell the company because I asked myself, you know, one question is, what are my priorities in life? And the answer was family.
Great. Listen, Ahmed, stay safe. Ahmed, Brandon, Kadash, thanks so much. Member of the Israeli IDF in the fight that everybody's looking at. Thanks, Kamit.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, I'll be able to take some of your calls and find out what's going on. We know the President of the United States, the former President of the United States, behind closed doors, his attorney's going to bat for the fact that they're trying to avoid any type of fines or retribution for what they say, what the prosecution has said, is a violation of the gag order. But you watch Donald Trump every day. He's not talking about the case. That is his time to speak out. Today, he was focused more on Pennsylvania and why everyone should go out and vote. I'm not sure if you met Dave McCormick, but that is the most compelling thing. Dave McCormick from Pennsylvania. His dad was Bloomsburg, was the president of Bloomsburg College in Pennsylvania. And now he is a self-made multimillionaire, maybe a billionaire. He also went to West Point, where he's an outstanding wrestler, served in the military. All right, listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Brian Kilmeade here. I realize I got to get more slack out of this, Eric, because I got to be able to stand up. Everyone locked everything up because we read the studio. If you should, another reason to get Fox Nation, you could actually see what we're doing. Well, let me see. I think that should be enough, shouldn't it? Yeah, that should be enough. Although, maybe that look all right? Probably not. All right, 1-866-408-7669. We're just following a few stories. We're going to get every day. We have people involved in the overflow room. People involved in the overflow room of the trial, where they're getting the best view possible. We're getting the best view possible of the court case. They say if you're actually in the courtroom with Trump, you only get to see the back of his head. You only get to see one area, which you actually get a chance to do traditionally now is you get a chance to in the overflow room, see everything as well as get comments from the other press. So we'll see some of that. So we'll go with Varney and Company in just a couple of minutes. Then we'll have a chance to talk to him then. So with the Trump situation, if you're a Democrat, you're intrigued, you think you have a chance to finally convict Donald Trump. But what I noticed, too, when you flip to these other channels, they're not saying what a great case it is and how we have to get to the bottom of it. They're just saying how quick is he going to be found guilty? How quick is he going to be fined because of the gag order? How much is it going to hurt him to be able to sit there and not campaign? Ben Domenech picked up on all that. Cut 30.
I believe this is entirely a sideshow. I don't think that the American people care about this at all. I think that the former president would be wise to take up doodling on his legal pad.
So we'll pick up on that in a moment. So let's listen.
It's 10:51. Here comes Brian Kilmeade. Brian, I want to know this. When will the authorities get a handle on anti-Semitism at our colleges, like, for example, Columbia University?
Well, number one, you have to ask for the cops. On Thursday, the president asked for the cops to come in at 7 in the morning, gut the tents, and they did that. So they were able to get that, get some semblance of order there, but only lasted a few hours. And then all the tents went back. And on top of that, they have anti-Semitism raging to the point where yesterday they said, if you're Jewish, don't go to school. In fact, we wouldn't have anybody go to school. If you're a Jewish professor, we're going to nullify your card to get in because we don't think it's going to be safe. And the NYPD has to wait on the outside unless there's a credible sense of a crime. For example, if they get a call from somebody in the tent that's saying they're being harassed or they're being robbed, then they can go in. I go back to we have a lawmaker on from Oklahoma. And he says this is never going to happen. A superintendent on for Oklahoma, I should say. He goes, this would never happen in Oklahoma State. As soon as the first tent went in the ground, we would have pulled it right up and said, you're out of here. You're suspended. That's not what you do. That's not how you protest. You cannot stop the right. Academic performance of everybody else because you have an idea of what our foreign policy should be, which has gone from hey, get some humanitarian into Gaza to anti-Semitism, anti-American.
Well, look, this is just coming at us. The New York Police Department is asking who's paying for these protests. The NYPD notices that the tents are the same, the bullhorns are the same. The Wall Street Journal says, hey, it's Hamas that is organizing and paying for this. I don't think they're right.
Yeah, there's students' organizations, there's other international organizations. We don't know. It says it's an opaque sense of where the funding's coming from. But think about it. They have to get to a point where America is no longer supporting Israel. They got to get to the point where Americans are no longer supporting Israel. Therefore, politicians who want to get elected can't support Israel. And without America, Israel vaporizes probably within 6 months or a year. Well, they have to find some other major way to get some arms, weapons, and some backup. You saw what it took the whole world from the UK to Jordan to the U.S. to France to knock those 300 missiles out of the sky. But if the U.S. pulls back, Israel gets devastated today. So what you do is you get the next generation. I hope people realize how they're being manipulated. I hope the Jewish community in America realizes they got to start pushing back, and not just Bob Kraft and the New England Patriots. They got to tell these institutions that you lose your federal funding, you're going to lose your other funding from successful people that graduated unless you change your policies, because it's anti-American. And if you're pro-Palestinian, you're pro-Hamas, because they love Hamas. Hamas has got an 80% approval rating. The only way to find out if they're being held hostage and or not don't believe the ratings is if we wipe them out, if the Israelis wipe them out in Rafah. And then when you wipe them out as a military force, you find out what the people really think. But right now, I'm going to believe the Palestinians love the Hamas government.
A quick change of subject here. President Biden could soon give legal status to illegal migrants who are married to legal U.S. citizens. It would reportedly make hundreds of thousands of people, migrants, illegals, eligible for work permits. What do you say to that?
Well, number one, if they played over, if they came in here illegally, that should be, they should be nullified right there. You can't get married to somebody who got here illegally and get citizenship. That's fundamentally wrong. That better be challenged in the courts by all the Republicans. But number two, it's not unusual. You meet someone on campus from another country. If you get married, you know this, Stuart, probably personally. But when you get married to somebody from another country, yep, you have to go and prove it's a real relationship. They want to see a history. Yep. They want to see receipts. They're going to have to submit to interviews. So there's a part of our immigration system that's harder than ever, costs more than ever, that is really stand up, ready to go, maybe needs to be loosened up a little. And there's another part that's wide open, and you cannot allow this to happen. And there better be massive pushback from the Republican machine.
I hope there is. Brian, thanks for joining us. See you again soon.
All
Brian
right.
Kilmeade.
Go get him, Stuart. So I appreciate him having on. I want you to hear, we're just talking back to the Trump trial for a second. And that was Stuart Varney from FBN. Let's play the rest of Ben Domenech talking about the trial that's taking place right now. Cut 31.
I believe this is entirely a sideshow. I don't think that the American people care about this at all. I think that the former president would be wise to take up doodling on his legal pad and then auctioning them off after every day to the highest bidder.
And that would be one thing he has. He cannot work his cell phone. He has to sit there and just wait and watch. They evidently, it's a dungy room, goes back to, it looks like the land that time forgot in 1971. And he's got to sit there knowing how much he's got to do and the life he could be dealing with. So for next 6 weeks, minimum, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, he's got to stay there. These are the only two half days because Thursday, Passover, I believe, is over. So he's going to go back to going a full day right after this. Transcripts are going to be available. My hope is he's got a good defense team. And they're going to just point out other things that make it logical to say, guys, you can't convict on this. My hope is they bring up other campaigns and what other things have done. Are you going to tell me, Bill, you didn't hear about Bill Clinton's problems? Do you remember on 60 Minutes, Hillary Clinton sitting there talking about the myriad of affairs that Bill Clinton had? JFK, what he was doing prior to becoming president, if that came out. FDR basically had a full other relationship the whole time. This happened years prior to him running for office. They said, you know what, for this to come out, it's going to be a negative. So let's not have it come out. Let's handle the NDA. And they did. And they took the money. And then they found out about it. And now they want these women to talk. Karen McDougal's going to be talking right after David Pecker of the Inquirer. And then they're going to bring up Michael Cohen, we believe. Should be a lot. And then the defense is up there to talk about it. Don't beat up on the women, but just find a problem. But point out to people what's legal and what is not legal. Brian Kilmeade.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So much going on. I come to him from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where all the big stories are really taking place. All challenging, all different, all unique. Brooke Singman is at the courtroom today where Donald Trump is. She'll be filing a report with us. We believe in studio at 34 after. Kash Patel, former DOD chief of staff and deputy assistant to President Trump, is going to be with us shortly. And we do want to update everyone. It looks like the president of the United States will make go to Tampa, Florida. And get this, for a change, he'll talk abortion. That would be uplifting, wouldn't it? Then he'll participate in another campaign event. Then he'll go home. He thinks he can win Florida. Good luck with that. Let's go to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Those are big jumps, and they're reflective not only of the failures of Joe Biden and the continued poor policy decisions that Democrats are making. People are looking back at the Trump term and saying, my paycheck went further. I felt that there was a better chance at tomorrow than today.
Yeah, that's Aaron Perini. Used to be with Trump up until 2020. And now we'll talk 2024. Trump v. Biden, latest polls, game plans, and strategies. As Trump is trapped in court, Joe talks climate and abortion.
Number two.
I actually think that in celebrity cases, you sometimes really need to take the stand. But after that ruling, no, I think I would advise him not to do it. The risks are too high. This is a very weak case.
I know. I would not do it. I don't think he's even thinking about doing it. Trump trial will feature a hearing on whether Donald Trump violated the gag order. That's pretty much just wrapped up. David Pecker of the Inquirer is back on the stand. He's only there because he was subpoenaed. He gave about 30 minutes of testimony yesterday. Then one of the jurors had a toothache. The prosecution wants to say he conspired with Cohen to win an election. I thought the Russians gave him the election.
Number one.
It is especially important that we remember the power of young people shaping this country today, of all days, as we once again witness the leadership of those peaceful student-led protests on campus.
Yeah, peaceful. I think she says that just so she'd get on this show. Riotous behavior overwhelms two of the biggest college campuses in New York City, along with Harvard, Yale, Tufts College, and the New School in downtown New York, as the ceasefire movement has moved into a pro-Palestine, Hamas, anti-Semitic activism and violence. And we just see the NYPD says they're concerned that some agitators are in between pretending they're students but causing unrest. Kash Patel joins us now. Kash, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back on the show.
Kash, how frustrated is the president that he's in court now for six straight days?
Well, obviously, I can't speak for him personally, and he speaks very publicly about it. But anyone being baselessly prosecuted, and from my perspective, just a violation of simple due process, would be extremely frustrated, because if that's happening to him, the question is, who else are they willing to do it to? And I think that's the impetus, in my personal opinion, that drives President Trump. While they are targeting him, they are going to come after and have come after others. And every day we see a new form of justice, quote unquote, that the states and local authorities are doling out at the expense of the Biden administration.
Right. We're trying to find out what evidently they had 10 to the prosecution had 10 samples of how he violated the gag order, mm-hmm. and the defense had nothing. Kash, I hope these guys are prepared. You could be as talented as you want. Have they prepared for this case?
The
Trump's defense.
Yeah, and you're raising the gag order is a great point. Just last week, Alvin Bragg said that when Donald Trump posts on social media, he should be held in contempt of court. But the very next day, when they were selecting the prospective jury and the juror's social media posts were thrown up in front of Alvin Bragg, Alvin Bragg said, oh, those are to be taken as a joke. They're just social media postings. This just shows, and this was highlighted by the Trump defense team, and shows a glaring violation of due process. Which is it? Are social media posts sufficient to jail the defendant, or are they insufficient to take off bias from members of a prospective jury pool? So I think that was keenly pointed out, and I'm sure they'll raise that again today. It can't be a dual standard. It's
right.
Illegal.
I absolutely think so. So head-to-head in the polls, right now in January, Trump was up by 5. Now it looks like his lead is down to 2. How the race shifts in a multi-way field, including RFK. Biden on top of Trump, 39-37, with RFK getting 13. Do you look at RFK as a threat? Does the Trump team?
I personally don't. I think RFK is a candidate that a lot of those on the traditional left will flock to, and they already have flocked to. You know, the polls are the polls. They say what they say, and we won't know until actual election day. But I think at the end of the day, people are well reminded that RFK is an aggressive leftist. He is a Democrat. He is not a person who subscribes to even moderate conservative values. And the one issue that has put him in the middle lane, so to speak, is his position on all things COVID. So I don't think that's enough to bring over all the voters that they're saying from Trump world to RFK camp.
So what is Lara Trump now taking over the RNC? How has that affected the RNC?
Well, look, I'm not an RNC guy, but I look at numbers. And since she's come in, there's been a huge boon to the tune, I think I last checked, of 65-70 million, a fundraising record month in her first month. So my position is the RNC's job is to raise money for the presidential candidate and to get out there and put out voter initiatives throughout the country. And to me, they're doing both of those things. I've seen them personally implementing those programs in a couple of places. So hopefully that's where they keep going.
So what is your take on what's happening on these college campuses? The former president weighed in on it and says it's a disgrace. How do you feel?
Well, look, as a former public defender and national security advisor, national security prosecutor, I'm a guy that always says the bedrock of the United States Constitution is due process, and a core concept of that is free speech. I never want to violate anyone's free speech for saying what they think. But when it turns to violence, when it turns to a political act of malfeasance, then people must step in. And I think in some of these instances, like Columbia University, these people are actually taking a position that is pro a terrorist organization over the rights of Americans and American citizens and our allies in Israel. And I think that is an untenable position to take. And I think politically, President Trump has done smartly to point that out and say, wait a second, this has gone way too far. We stand with Israel. We don't stand with Hamas.
How about funding? Who's funding these guys? You really think these students are tapping their parents' credit card?
Well, listen, I'm not a genius on that stuff, but I might say George Soros and company have a participation in that, just like they do with the migrant hordes down south, just like they do with so many of the lawfare initiatives that have been brought against Donald Trump and his supporters. So wouldn't be surprised if George Soros and company were also funding that. You're right. They don't have the funds to do it.
1 o'clock in the afternoon, there's going to be a walkout at NYU. Everyone's going to be monitoring that. And, of course, the cops are going to be stressed. I mean, it's law enforcement's got to step in and try to control these protests. When the faculty lock arms in front of the students yesterday, now if you're thinking you're an NYPD official, why do I need this? The school called to help. And then they have the professors protecting the students who are ignoring the curriculum and the policies of the campus. This is one broken rule after the next.
Well, that's just it. It's a stacked system. And look, I'm originally from New York. A lot of my guys and friends are still on the NYPD, just like yours. And they have for years been removed from the ability to enforce law enforcement constitutionally. And they have been the ones who have been attacked repeatedly when the politicians in New York City have allowed crime to explode. And this is no difference. Now, I'm with the NYPD on this one and always will be. They should be able to enforce these laws, but they are rightly questioning their enforcement because the NYPD, will be the ones who are attacked by not just the media and the politicians, but also by the district attorneys who may go after them for trying to quell a riot.
So, Cash, the president of the United States said nice things about the speaker again. They met. They said nice things. He did his talk yesterday. He said nice things about him, about the legislation that passed over the weekend to fund Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel, and Indochina, and ban TikTok. Are you also one that thinks the speaker's doing a good job, or are you saying you can't have another speaker election this close to the election?
I think those two are inextricably intertwined. It's a political conversation as well as a one of competency. Do I personally think that we should be giving money to the Ukraine? No. And so do a lot of Donald Trump supporters. But politically, it would be not smart, unwise to offer another speakership race and probably hand over the Democrats actual control of the chamber. So I think what President Trump astutely highlighted was he said, and I quote, the guy's got a one vote majority. He's doing what he can. Now, do I agree with his policies? I have the liberty of saying I don't. I want to take care of our border first. I want to take care of our veterans and our cops and our teachers first. And then if we have money money left over to go to the Ukraine. But I think it's a very impossible position he's been put in Congress to lead with the one-vote majority.
Right.
So hopefully he returns to some of the promises Speaker Johnson made to the American public about securing our borders.
Yeah, I think Ukraine is definitely worth the fight. I think Reagan would be backing Ukraine, and it definitely helps our interests, too, because 60% of all the money goes to replenishing our own stock. The other big case they have is immunity. They're trying to find out immunity will be heard by the Supreme Court on Thursday, saying whatever the president does on January 6th, he was president. When he took the documents, he was president. So what happens with the documents and with the January 6th, let alone the details of what he had and what he didn't have and what he said and didn't say, you're president if you're immune. Here's what Mike Davis said, Article 3 Project founder, Cut 22.
I would say to Liz Cheney and these other washed up Republican politicians, this is so much bigger than Donald Trump. This is about the presidency. If you can indict a president of the United States for his official acts, not his personal acts, his official acts, we are going to destroy the presidency and therefore destroy our country. Think about this. Can the Trump 47 Justice Department charge President Obama for capital murder for his extrajudicial drone strike of two American citizens, including a minor? Can the Trump 47 Justice Department charge President Biden for his illegal mass parole of illegal migrants into our country and the resulting crimes? Do the Democrats really want to go down this path?
Do you say that's congruent? This decision is the same as Mike spelled out?
Yeah, and what Mike was talking about in the first instance, I was a national security prosecutor in the Obama Justice Department when they drone struck a guy named Warsami, an American citizen in Yemen. And I agreed with his decision then to drone strike him, and I agree with him now, which is why I think presidential immunity is more important than ever. President Obama should not be prosecuted for that instance of conduct. He did the best thing he could with the intelligence he had to protect this nation. Every president should be afforded that presidential immunity, and it shouldn't be selectively applied like these state district attorneys are selectively applying due process. It is beyond a slippery slope should the Supreme Court not rule in the favor to protect presidential immunity, and here's the key, while they are president. It should be absolute.
Cash, you saw President Trump's team in 2016. You saw it in 2020. Where do you rank the 2024 team in terms of efficiency, competency, direction?
Yeah, look, I view it as you do from the outside. I think they're doing a fantastic job taking on all the the landscape, let's just put it that way, that is a Trump campaign between the trials and raising money and going out there and securing voters and putting on rallies and getting the president on all sorts of media platforms. So I think it's going well. I think the surrogates are doing a great job. And it's going to take that kind of lift and that kind of leadership that's there right now with President Trump's inner circle to get this thing across the finish line. So hopefully they keep swinging just as hard or twice as harder now that we're into the spring and summer.
Well, when we talk about Israel, I don't know if you heard last night, but our troops got rocketed in Iraq and Syria by these Iranian proxies. They have to having a period of silence. Who knows what the secret deal was done behind the scenes. What should our troops be doing now? And are you for pulling them out of Iraq as the Iraqis might be asking us to do?
I mean, that's a long conversation. The former chief of staff at DOD, our troops should be preeminently protected overseas, and they're not with the Biden administration and their agenda for put DEI over national security and the well-being of our American forces. Look, this attack, it should be noted, is this the 135th attack on American soldiers and installations in Syria and Iraq alone under the Biden administration? 135. When President Trump had just one attack and responded appropriately, the media lit him up for it. And the mainstream media is quiet. So I'm so glad you're bringing this up. But this takes a wholesale change in leadership. Whether we withdraw or not is not the question. It's why these troops haven't been given the intelligence platforms necessary to defend themselves. Why do three American troops die in southern Syria at an outpost? That should never have happened because the Biden administration has not prioritized the actual threat, terrorism, and the enemy coming after our allies in the Middle East.
I hear you. Cash Patel, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Former DOD Chief of Staff, Deputy Assistant to President Trump. When we come back, the latest on the trial, how the hearing about the violation of the gag order went for both sides. Then Brooks Singman at the bottom of the hour. Busy day. So glad you're here.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It was absolutely outrageous
for President Biden to create a moral equivalent, the same kind of moral equivalence he complained about in Charlottesville, between anti-Semitic protests, which he condemns, and then he says, I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. What an outrageous moral comparison. Nobody could in any way support what Hamas did, yet these kids are yelling, I am Hamas. We want to repeat the rapes over and over again 1,000 times, and he's equating that morally with people who reasonably believe that what's happening to the Palestinians is largely the fault of Hamas. It's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, we're looking at crazy things on campus. As I mentioned before, we just got word that NYU is going to stage a walkout at 1 o'clock. Now, they had, NYU had 133 arrests yesterday. Some of the chants that were so endearing, NYPD, KKK. Okay, that's nice. How about 61 arrests at Harvard? How about 50 arrests at Yale? Also, arrests were made at Emerson College in in Massachusetts, Tufts, as well as Rice in Texas. That's stunning. Berkeley in California, not surprising, as well as MIT. And I imagine it's happening in other places. It might be happening at a school near you. And I would say this. They told the Columbia kids, you can go for a hybrid. You want to go on campus, you can go on campus. But you've had other people, Jewish students, say, I don't feel comfortable. But yet you got to go back to your pandemic schooling now. So you're dealing with that. Now, I think this is going to start. They're going to talk about federal funding to these universities. So Congresswoman Virginia Fox says the federal funding could be jeopardized if the Columbia president does not step up and do something and get these kids back in school and get those tents off the center of campus. But they brought in, evidently, bathroom facilities. They have barbecues. They're looking to stay there, I don't know, for the rest of the semester, which traditionally is the second week in May, the latest, and there's graduation there. I mean, at graduation, what's that going to be like? It's going to be exactly like this. I mean, I don't even know if they're going to have it. If you're Jewish, do you want to go and jeopardize your family to come down and maybe be subjected to some type of harassment? I wouldn't, but I'd get my degree, but I wouldn't go to any ceremony. I'd get my degree. You're 1 month away. Do not go home. Whatever you do. What I would do if I was Columbia president, I would demand that all those tents get up. Then I'd bring in the NYPD. Number two, I'd meet with all anybody that wanted to meet that worried about their security. I wouldn't even say Jewish. I would say that we're going to use a portion of our endowment for private security. I've contacted 3 or 4 firms. Figure out how many kids it is. I think it's 4,000. And I would say, listen, we're going to meet at these certain places, and we'll be able to walk you in and out of class until you feel safe to the end of the semester. Say, I'm sorry it came to this, but my safety, your safety and security is paramount, and I want you to go to school. That, to me, is proactive. And I let the chips fall where they may. And all your Palestinian Hamas students that want to apply next semester, maybe go somewhere else. Brooke Singman comes in next. He tells us what's happening with the gag order hearing today.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We know that this is going to happen, that you see this already, even though there's been some liberal legal experts have criticized this case and said we don't see the crime either. We certainly have never seen a case like this one. The media is expected to become this echo chamber for the district attorney. And even if you tell jurors to avoid the news, there's no real guarantee that they're going to do that. And they're going to be in a city that's absolutely saturated with it. So the defense has to go in and assume that all of those fail safes have failed and that you're going to have to make that case even stronger in the courtroom.
All right. Brooke Singman's been following everything Trump related, especially this court case. And So, Jonathan Turley, that was after yesterday's hearing. He was on with Laura last night, and he was essentially saying, I believe less in this case than ever before. But, Brooke, this morning, we didn't get the trial until it just started about 30 minutes ago.
Yep.
Because of?
because of this gag order hearing. So Judge Juan Merchan was expected to hear arguments from Alvin Bragg and prosecutors from New York and defense attorneys for the former president on these gag order alleged violations. So Merchan imposed this gag order over Trump before the trial began last month. Trump is not allowed to specifically refer to any witnesses, jurors, court staff. But of course, the former president in recent weeks has been and days has been posting to his Truth Social account about witnesses, potential witnesses in this case. The Trump team has said that he has a right to defend himself. And of course, they have been arguing to have this gag order lifted and removed because they feel it's a violation of the former president's First Amendment rights. But of course, today, the judge heard arguments from Alvin Bragg's team. They allege that Trump has violated this gag order 10 times at this point. They want a fine of $1,000 for each violation. So at this point, where Trump, if Merchan did rule in Bragg's favor, Trump would be in the hole for $10,000 of violations of this gag order. But Merchan did not rule today. What he did was hear arguments from Bragg's team. And what they did was go through each and every post that they felt was an actual alleged violation of this gag order. Those posts were from Trump relating to adult film actress Stormy Daniels, who is expected to be a witness here. His former lawyer, Michael Cohen, who also will be a witness in this case. And the prosecution has been referring to those posts. Trump's attorneys got up and said that he did not violate the gag order. But when the judge asked them to give an example of how he did not violate the gag order and if those posts were actually in response to anything specific that Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen had said, defense attorney Todd Blanche didn't exactly answer that question. And Merchan was not happy about that.
Yeah, they wanted to say, okay, tell me what he was responding to. And but it would have been relatively easy to say, here's Michael Cohen on MSNBC. Here's Michael Cohen on a podcast. And the timing might not have worked, but at least you'd say you're prepared. And who says he has to respond in real time to what they said? But instead, showing up with nothing, doesn't that worry you if you're Trump?
I mean, I don't know how the former president would feel about his defense at that point, but I do know that he walked out of the courtroom and he asked that. He posted on his Truth Social while this gag order hearing was happening. He posted on his Truth Social account saying that this is a kangaroo court, that the judge should recuse himself, and that the judge is so unfair to him and taking away his constitutional right to free speech. But again, on your point about what the defense was doing, the judge actually said that Todd Blanche, the defense attorney for the former president, was, quote, losing all credibility with the court by not actually responding, like you said, by not actually making a point of what the former president was responding to in terms of how he was posting about Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen.
I know the president's uncoachable because he's always in charge, but I'm wondering if there's an attorney out there that could say to him, comment on this, not on that. Comment on this, comment on not that, because this keeps, you know, this will move this whole process on quicker. Number one, it would be better to have that testimony all morning.
Right.
Let alone you got to cut off at 2 o'clock today because of Passover.
Right. And yesterday they had to cut off at noon because a juror had a toothache. So, you know, things have this has been a little bit delayed. But yes, this morning, Trump attorneys, the former president and prosecutors got to court at 9:30. Jurors were not allowed inside the courtroom until 11. And Merchan has not ruled if Trump actually violated these gag orders. But Trump did, just to read you what he said during the hearing. He posted to his Truth Social. I don't know if it was when he was sitting in the courtroom or when he went into the hallway, but he said, quote, the judge is highly conflicted, to put it mildly. Judge Juan Merchan has taken away my constitutional right to free speech. Everybody is allowed to talk and lie about me, but I am not allowed to defend myself. This is a kangaroo court and the judge should recuse himself. Of course, the judge last week said to that point, Trump's argument that he should recuse himself, he said there is no basis for him to recuse himself
because he makes his own decision. But
right.
But if you talk to any fair person, if you donate to the presidential opponent of the person that's on trial, if your daughter could benefit from the success of a conviction, if she is a known operative, not a kid. People keep saying his daughter. His daughter's like 35 years old.
Right.
And she's getting out a $4 million contract for a consulting contract with Adam Schiff to become the next senator. Okay. He was the arch enemy of President Trump during the whole Russia hoax. That should be enough for any fair-minded person that wasn't doing a photo shoot prior to this to this court case.
Right. And a lot of allies of the former president say that as well, that he should recuse himself because of his daughter's work with Adam Schiff. Yes. And Vice President Kamala Harris, her presidential campaign in 2020, she dropped out very early, obviously, and became the vice president. But her campaign also worked with the judge's daughter's company. You know, but the judge doesn't see a reason for him to recuse himself based on that. But of course, he didn't seem too happy with Trump's team today, but he did not rule about the gag order.
Well, what could he do? Put Trump in prison? How would that go over?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. That's what the prosecutors for Alvin Bragg were saying this morning, that yes, he is. They want to fine him $1,000 per alleged violation, but they also are warning that, you know, it hasn't reached the level yet, but future violations, if he allegedly continues to violate this gag order, they say he could serve up to 30 days in prison. That's what they keep warning.
Who's warning? Bragg's team.
Bragg's team is warning. Judge. Not yet. The judge is not warning that yet. So we'll see how he responds and how he rules on this matter. They didn't exactly say when he would decide if these gag orders or the violations actually occurred. So
again, we're going to get transcripts at the end of the day. Did you get yesterday's? Because I did not get yesterday's.
I did not get yesterday's.
Well, hopefully we'll have it on a day. It'd be much better to just hear it.
Yeah.
Because you see it. Are you going to try to go to the overflow room?
Yes, at some point. I hope to get down to the court. But
it's going to be hard with this show. I would love to be there
totally.
One day. Here's what Alan Dershowitz said yesterday. Cut 15.
What is happening on college campuses today may be worse than what happened on January 6th, may be worse than what happened in Charlottesville, and we are not concerned nearly as much about it as we were about January 6th. January 6th involved a relatively small number of people, low thousands. They aren't people who are going to be our future leaders. Charlottesville didn't involve our future leaders. What's going on college campuses today, we are Hamas, means our future leaders, the people who will be in the editorial rooms of the New York Times, on CNN, in Goldman Sachs, in law firms, running for Congress.
So, and Alan Dershowitz said, of course, the president of the United States has also weighed in, called it an absolute disgrace that it's happening on campus, called for the NYPD to be allowed in. And where's Joe Biden on this?
Right. I mean, the president has condemned anti-Semitism, but he hasn't exactly come out against all of these students. And you saw the scenes from NYU, from Yale, of course, Columbia last week. These are massive protests. To see NYPD in riot gear going out last night. And of course, yes, they are pro-Gaza, anti-Israel protests, but it's worthy to note. I mean, it was Passover, the first night of Passover last night. And to see, you know, all of these Israeli flags burning and whatnot are crumpled in the street with NYPD officers in riot gear. It was quite a scene.
Brooks Singman here, who's covering the Trump campaign, and now it's the Trump trial. So, Brooks, you know that right away that scene with the bodega owners was a real positive for the campaign.
Yep.
And there's some talk about the president going to supermarkets. I would amend that, and I would go to Columbia.
Yeah.
And I'd get on security. I'd go up to Columbia. What is going on here? This has got to stop. The news has come to New York. Then he got the smaller one at the new school, the bigger one at NYU. Looks like NYU is really out of control. Alert the NYPD, and you go down there, and you make the president look. He goes, I'm here for one reason. I got to tell this White House that this is out of control in New York. It's out of control at Tufts, out of control at Harvard, out of control at Yale, out of control now, we understand, at Berkeley, Emerson, Rice, and Tufts, MIT. So you could just sit there, and you could cover this whole gamut.
Yeah.
And to me, I would like to see, especially today in a half day, my sense is the people around him have been so astute to this point. Can you see this happening?
I mean, sure. That's the thing. The former president says that these trials that the Democrats, that his opponents want to have him confined to the courtroom. But of course, like you mentioned, going to the bodega in Harlem last week, making sure he gets out to do his rallies. And he is not staying quiet on these massive protests at campuses across the nation. So sure, I could see him doing something like that, but we'll have to talk to the campaign to see if they have plans to do so. But yes, like you said, the news has come to New York, and he seems to highlight that repeatedly, whether it's about rising crime or lack of law enforcement resources and whatnot. That's what Trump is running on Law and Order, right?
Right. So. Would Dana White bring the UFC here for Madison Square Garden so he could go during the week?
Yeah. Who knows?
They got the Knick game, which was pretty phenomenal last night.
Yeah.
All right. So, Brooke, we'll see what's going to happen with the campaign. I can't imagine him taking the rest of the afternoon off again, because let's say they're done at 2 o'clock because of Passover. Then you got 3 hours before people get off, and then you, even at night, I don't know. He's got his whole team. He's got a lot of his team here, right?
Yeah, he does.
Is it a big footprint here?
He has a huge footprint here, definitely. I mean, this is something that we should definitely follow. I'll reach out to the campaign, find out what their plans are.
And they're off tomorrow.
To this. Yes, court is off tomorrow. So who knows if they're sticking around today or if they're heading out of town for Florida or out on the campaign trail somewhere else. I mean, that's the thing that the former president, again, is always – is repeatedly said in the hallway of the courtroom, he could be out in Iowa. He could be campaigning right across the nation, but he's here. And as you'll remember last week when he went to that bodega, he did say, you know, he wants to fix New York. So that you're right. There's news here in New York and
you know
a number of topics.
Do you know he's only trailing in New York by 10?
That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, he's only trailing in New York by 10. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Brooke, thanks so much. Let me know
Brian.
What happens.
Okay, we'll find out.
We'll come back in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This bill and the process of supporting Ukraine is really kind of a no-brainer when you think about it. I mean, Russia is clearly an adversary of the United States. Russia mounts this attack. Ukraine resists more effectively than anyone thought possible at first, has inflicted enormous damage on Russian military forces and the whole overall Russian military. All of this has come at a cost to an American dollars to some extent, of course. About a sixth of the Pentagon budget is what it's been, but at no cost in American lives. There aren't any American soldiers fighting there. So when you hear complaints about an endless war, maybe remember this, it may be a long war, but there are no Americans fighting in it. That's a pretty good deal when you think about it, or at least it ought to be.
We're going to find out they're going to officially get that money, $65 billion to Ukraine. Some aren't happy with it. I understand how you feel. I just don't understand if you don't understand the strategically how it helps America to support Ukraine. But and the word we gave in 1994 and what we started to do and we should have done under Barack Obama, that Donald Trump armed Ukraine. And then to Biden's credit, he gave Ukraine more arms, but not the right arms. Now we finally got it right. Then they ran out because of the border. I wish there was border in this, too. But now we understand Senator Schumer has just spoken. They're going to vote today, I think at 1 o'clock, and begin the voting on this aid package. They're going to lace it all together. That's Taiwan. That's TikTok ban if they don't divest. That is Israel. And most of the money goes to Ukraine. When that money flows in, hopefully it's going to get there quickly. As Zelensky told us on Sunday that we air with you on Monday, he said, yeah, it's great and we're fine. We just got to get it quick. He says, as you know, we were told we were going to get F-15s last July. Last July. Then we said we're going to start training in September. What happened? Now, we didn't even give the F-15s. It's the F-15s that was bought by other countries from us. They were going to lend to Ukraine, the F-15s, while the war was going on. But they have no pilots. They only can fly MiGs. So they had the pilots. I don't know what's happening with this program. I got to ask Michael Waltz. He usually knows what's going on. Here's more from Britt Hume on why this has got to pass. Cut 26. 27.
I wonder sometimes if these people can count. The House passed a border security bill that very popular among House Republicans. They sent it to the Senate, and it went absolutely nowhere because the Senate's controlled by Democrats, and Democrats didn't want it. Then there was a negotiation between the Senate and Republicans and Democrats over a bill to deal with the border. It had many good things in it. It was endorsed by the Border Patrol Union, and it was killed because House members said they weren't going to vote for it, and it was dead on arrival. So it wasn't as if an effort hasn't been made here. It has. They just simply didn't have the votes to pass it. So now comes this, and the hope among Republicans was that they could lever Democrats' desire for the Ukraine bill and other things in a way of getting a border security bill passed. They didn't have the votes to do that. Now they did these other things, which are important, just as the border is, but separate.
I'm supposed to have the speaker on next week. I'll bring him to you. And I always got along with him very well. Now he went from backbencher to the number one guy. Is that with that comes enemies. As Kevin McCarthy pointed out on this show, he said it helps if you have, if you were committee chair, you get used to, herding the cats, Republicans, Freedom Caucus, moderates, problem solvers who don't agree from the same party. Got it. But now Speaker Johnson got it right away. Another critique I heard about Speaker Johnson is, he's still a little bit in awe of talking with the president, and you can't be like that. It's the respect you have for the country and the House, and you got to go in there and deal directly with him. Don't even deal with Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer can be bypassed. He'll do whatever the president said. So if he's going to do whatever the president says, why deal with him at all? So that's one thing. I think we'll find that to be news today that Republicans aren't going to make a big deal of. I think it's also important to point out that yesterday Donald Trump was asked about Speaker Johnson. He says, he's got my full support. He's got a very small margin. He's a good guy. He's doing the best he can in a very tough position. The goal would be to give him more of a cushion next time around. Now, he's going to have a hard time being Speaker next time around, but that's a totally different conversation. So we'll see. The President of the United States was talking about for everyone to go out in Pennsylvania and vote, because today the primaries will happen, and it's going to be Casey against Dave McCormick, one of the key races in the Senate. And one of the key races in the Senate would also be what's happening out in Montana, as Tim Sheehy, a Navy SEAL, is going against John Tester, a pretend moderate. It doesn't reflect the people of Montana. I'm surprised if the farmer who pretends to be Joe Manchin, he never does, never gives a tough vote, if Tim Sheehy's the guy to trip him up. I mean, on paper, he is. We know in West Virginia, Jim Justice is a shoo-in to replace Joe Manchin, which makes you wonder if Larry Hogan can do it in Maryland. I mean, right now, he's up by one or two. If you put any other Republican there, they're trailing, they lose. Larry Hogan's got really impressed everybody as governor. Might not be the biggest Trump fan, but believe me, Trump will keep quiet during this because it could have the shape of the Senate. And just if he does, in fact, win, he needs the Senate. Or impeachment starts right away. You know it. Hey, don't forget, April 27th, I'm going to be going out to Henderson, Nevada. Brian Kilmeade, go to BrianKilmeade.com right now. Get tickets.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.